AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today in WILL AM 580 here on January 22nd, 2012. It is my pleasure to be here. There's probably no issue that unites Americans more than their distaste for the corruption of American politics and governance, the role of big money to buy and sell politicians and make profits off the public trust, and related to that, the amount of money that goes to electoral campaigns. Our guest today will be talking about the crisis, explaining it, and what is being done and can be done to change matters for the better. Our guest, Josh Silver, for the full hour, but before we go to him, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
Opposition to the Stop Online Piracy Act in the House and its companion bill in the Senate, the Protect IP Act, finally began making headlines on TV news programs this week. The bills drew high-profile coverage on all of the major networks, thanks to the participation of thousands of websites in a well-publicized protest and the blackout on Wednesday of some well-known sites, including Wikipedia and Reddit. Supporters of the bills, movie studios and record labels, say legislation is needed to protect the industry from online piracy. Opponents, internet companies, tech experts, public interest groups, and ordinary users, say the bill will do little to stop piracy, but will cause great harm to the freewheeling nature of the internet that has been the one bright spot in an otherwise dismal economy. The bills allow for any site accused of containing a single page with copyrighted material to be shut down without due process. Many websites would not survive the ensuing legal battle with deep-pocketed movie and record companies.
This industry is hiring, it is innovating, and it is doing the things that will get this economy in America going again. And yet we have legislation that threatens to stop that.
Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian spoke at a protest in front of the offices of Senators Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand in New York City. Both senators support the bill. The protest was organized by New York Tech Meetup. Hollywood lobbyists showered lawmakers with $94 million last year, Ohanian said. That's the kind of money that both Democrats and Republicans can agree on.
This has become an issue that's much bigger than just saving the internet now. This is a fight to save democracy. It is a fight to show that our elected officials are beholden to the electorate, not to lobbyists.
Yeah. Although the media often depict the fight about SOPA and PIPA as a clash of the titans, Hollywood versus Silicon Valley, Ohanian pointed out that a crowd of more than 2,000 was assembled in New York. The fight is for the future of all people working and using the internet. The protests, op-eds, petitions, and social media blitzes have begun to take effect. The House vote on SOPA has been postponed, and the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy said that he was willing to eliminate a provision from PIPA that allows for blocking domain names of websites. Republican members of the committee wrote to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid that the bill's procedure through the Senate should be slowed for both substantive and procedural reasons. Several lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have switched their stance on the bills and now oppose them. The push against the bills will continue. The Senate is due to vote on PIPA on January 24th.
When Merrill Gordon reported on the GOP presidential debate hosted by ABC earlier this month, she knew that men would dominate at the podium. But she was shocked to see the overwhelming number of men in the press corps. Gordon, who directs the magazine writing program at New York University, covered her first presidential election in 1972 and says she was often the only woman on the trail. Decades later, she thought the makeup of the campaign press corps would have evolved to include an equal number of female reporters. ABC told Gordon that only about 25% of the reporters covering the recent debate were women.
I remember fighting so hard to get into a lot of rooms when I was younger. I was the only woman in the room, and it often felt like I had to fight to make my way there. I don't think people have to fight as hard now as they did then, but I was disappointed. I was really hoping that I would look out into a sea of faces and I would see as many women as men.
Gordon decided to dig a little deeper into the gender imbalance on the campaign trail. Her article on the subject was published last week in the Columbia Journalism Review. She discovered many traditional news outlets, including The Economist, The Atlantic, and Time, put predominantly male staff on the campaign trail. And many new media outlets have followed suit, including The Huffington Post, Politico, and Talking Points Memo.
I was surprised, particularly in the new media area, that balance was so lopsided.
While the press corps skews male, women actually outnumber men at the polls. In the 2008 presidential election, 53% of voters were women. Gordon is uncertain how the gender imbalance among journalists will affect reporting and voters' decisions, but she's worried that more women aren't pinning bylines.
So I think that it matters in the kind of questions people ask and the point of view that they take. I mean, it's hard to say X story gets covered and Y story doesn't, but I think overall you really want a range of experiences and backgrounds of journalists on the trail.
To read Gordon's article, visit cjr.org.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580, coming to you live today. Our guest is an old friend of myself and of the program. Josh Silver is formerly the co-founder of Free Press with me, so we have a connection there, the media reform organization, where he served as CEO and executive director until he left 1 year ago. Before that, he worked and organized the campaign for public financing of elections in Arizona, and the issue of money in politics has been near and dear to his heart for as long as I've known him. He is now the new CEO and executive director of a group, United Republic, just formed to battle the issue of money in politics. It's my pleasure to welcome Josh Silver to Media Matters. Josh, you there?
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure. You know, I think, as I said in the intro to the show, that most Americans, if not all Americans, are well aware that there is a stench from the role of money in our governing system, with lobbying and special interest in banks and right on down the list of powerful groups that pay their way and get favorable legislation and subsidies as a result. And that this relates to the funding of elections, which is sort of the core of what your concerns are. But maybe you could just spell out a little more, put a little more beef on the bones for listeners who really haven't paid too much attention about the nature of the problem of money in politics.
Sure. I mean, really, the reason I left the media reform space to get back into money politics is that it's so corrupt and it's so disastrous in terms of the outcomes of the most fundamental debates that have nothing to do with money and politics on their face, but have a lot to do with people's day-to-day lives, like whether or not our air and water will be clean or not, whether or not we have the ability to find good-paying jobs, whether we have health care access, whether or not we have banking crises that drop our make us lose our savings and drop our economy into a super recession. These are the issues that are being warped and skewed by money in politics, and it's so dirty. And Bob, you know this. You've just as in your role as having once been the chair of Free Press and your deep knowledge of the media issues, the public really is incidental at this point in terms of debates that are happening in Washington and in most state houses. That literally, politicians are so steeped in big money. Keep in mind, an average senator, U.S. senator, has to raise $7.5 million every election cycle, $3,400 a day. A member of the House averages about $1,900 a day to run for office. These politicians are so—they're so completely steeped in money. They don't even really factor the public. Often, oftentimes, they merely think about which warring industries that can give them big money for their campaign contributions they should side with. Is it going to be Google today, or should it be Comcast? I mean, that's the general trajectory of where our government has gone. And I think since Citizens United, which, as many of your listeners know, just had its second anniversary, and it's the disastrous Supreme Court case, which basically said corporations enjoy the same free speech rights as people, this is what really blew the lid off. And in a way, it may end up being a blessing even more than a curse, in that finally, for the first time in my 17 years following this issue, people really seem to be getting it. They're starting to understand that this problem of money in politics has reached crisis levels, partly reflected by what we're seeing in the GOP primaries right now. Right now we're seeing, up until a few days ago, the so-called independent expenditures, the super PACs, the money spenders that John Colbert and Stephen Colbert and John Stewart have done such a great job of mocking, which is these fake independent groups that are supposed to not coordinate with the candidates but do. They've been outspending the candidates themselves 2-1. There's been $34 million spent by super PACs just in this cycle already, and we've hardly even gotten into the campaigns. So the crisis is horrific enough that at this point today, a recent poll shows half of Americans believe that Congress is corrupt. A CNN poll recently came out, said 86% of Americans believe that Congress's priorities are set by donors, and that same Congress currently enjoys or doesn't enjoy a 9% approval rating by the American people. So we're deep in it, and we really, in some ways, have only one way to go, and that is up at this point.
Josh Silver, our guest today, the CEO, executive director of the new group, United Republic. You can find out about United Republic at unitedrepublic.org. Josh Silver, not too long ago, Floyd Abrams, the First Amendment attorney who does a lot of work for commercial media and also pro bono work for sort of citizens. But he also was one of the people who argued in behalf of Citizens United before the Supreme Court. It's a free speech issue, that money is speech. He wrote a sort of a defense of his behavior and of the Citizens United case, arguing, look, money in politics was a huge issue before Citizens United. Swift Boat Veterans for Truth did everything they wanted to do, and all these groups are doing everything they want to do. That was legal before Citizens United. Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. How do you respond to Floyd Abrams' point?
Well, you know, Floyd Abrams is the best analogy would be, let's just say that our campaign finance system before Citizens United was maybe like in one of those movies where you're struggling and you're about to drown in water, and there's only about 6 inches. Maybe you're in a car wreck and there's only about 6 inches of air between you and the roof of the car as the car sinks to the bottom of the lake. Citizens United is the water pumping into the car and basically filling that last gap so that the American people are finally drowning. So you're right. I don't really want to go back to where you only have 6 inches of air. And if there is one good point that Abrams makes, that is, it was completely corrupt before Citizens United. And now it's so over the top that our government is really, and our elections have pretty much been rendered, a travesty. And you know, regardless of what you think of Newt Gingrich, the fact remains that in Iowa, you saw what happened. Romney, who has by far the biggest PAC of all in the current race right now, Mitt Romney's PAC has raised over $11 million, whereas Gingrich is about $4.5 million.
I mean, $4.5 million all from one guy.
Yeah, right, from the Vegas guy, but
the eighth richest guy in the country.
Yeah, but point being, the Romney team comes out and spends a bunch of money in Iowa in 1 week blasting Gingrich with television commercials, and you watched Gingrich's numbers just plummet. And what's really the most horrific outcome of Citizens United is then the candidates themselves, whereas in the past they would have to say, you know, I approve this message. Now they say, I have nothing to do with the people that did this. They just like me. And so these nasty, vitriolic, kind of horrific ads are being run on behalf of the candidate, but they have this sort of almost plausible deniability, which is we're starting to see some of the veneer come off that, thanks to John Stewart and Stephen Colbert. But it really is just completely dirty now.
Our guest today, Josh Silver from the new group United Republic. We're talking about money in politics, Citizens United, the sort of cash immersion of our elections, what it means, how it affects us, and what can be done about it. The number here at Media Matters at WILL AM 580 is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Lines are open. It is a live show, so please call in with questions or comments if you want to. Now, Josh Silver, U.S. Supreme Court decision on Citizens United 2 years ago, which gave corporations the right to spend unlimited amounts of money on campaigns, I guess with the provision that it not go directly to the candidates, or that seems to be how it's played out at least. One part of the decision that was in the majority opinion for Citizens United was that it was imperative that this money that goes to these shadowy groups, these super PACs, should be transparent. The citizens have a right to know who's putting up the money paying for these ads. But that part of the program hasn't really panned out, has it?
Well, you know, this is what most people don't realize. There's two ways that it doesn't pan out. The first way is that there's very simple methods for those who run super PACs to change their accounting. Literally, they'll change it from reporting monthly to reporting quarterly and back in ways that simply put, allow them to delay their reporting dates. So super PACs are actually transparent, but for example, in the case of most of the spending that's happened on the GOP primary, these super PACs don't report the money. They don't have to report the money until after the money has been spent and the public has been manipulated. So you'll see a whole raft of reports coming in, for example, in the next week or so. And then there's another way they get around it. Again, this is showing just what a travesty this is. They're called 501c4, so it's a tax status that different organizations can take where it's completely anonymous forever. This is where the Koch brothers put all of their
This is one of Karl Rove's favorite moves, too, as I understand it.
Right, and he runs a super PAC and a C4. The C4 makes contributions to the super PAC. The C4 can also make their own TV ad buys, except they follow these what have become laughable standards that say those ads can't actually say, you know, don't allow McChesney to win office, vote him out. So there's ways they have to be a little slightly softer than a super PAC ad, but they still get across the same exact message. And many of the ads, most of the ads in Iowa, for example, qualified as C4 standards. So there's two ways for them to get around it, and they do it every day. And at the end of the day, the transparency that the Supreme Court called for has been thrown out the window.
What we're seeing right now, Josh Silver, is that there's this flood of money to these super PACs. We may get to know who some of the donors are. We probably won't know most of them. But the research we've seen so far shows that almost all of them are billionaires or 100 millionaires or corporations. There's not even small fry, seven or eight digit net worth people contributing. This is a game just for the super rich who can plunk down a few hundred grand or a few million and not have it and take it out of the spare change drawer. And what does this do to, you know, in 2008, President Obama was elected and gave a lot of fanfare to the idea that he had more small donors than ever in American history. Now, I'm not sure that's true. But if that is true, I mean, why would a small donor give to a campaign if you know all the actions being taken place by billionaires on some sort of side bet?
Yeah, no, you raise a good point. I mean, so many people, particularly people with a libertarian bent, really often point to the success of Obama's small dollar fundraising and how really you don't need to control campaign finance because the small donor is really rising thanks to the internet. But the precise dynamic that you just described is what's happening right now. I mean, there is just an extraordinary amount of frustration and just absolute sort of what's becoming just folks don't care anymore about politics. They feel like it's become so corrupt that it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter whether or not they participate. And what's a heartening side of that, a silver lining, is that a poll just released last week shows that by a 2-to-1 margin, the American people think that money in politics, this issue, would actually be an important factor in their votes. You know, how the candidates view this issue actually matters to them on election day. We have not ever seen that before. So I think people are really starting to see, finally, that this is a problem that has hit its apex and has to be fixed. So the question then becomes, and Bob, I've known you for a while. I know this is your next one anyway. What are we going to do about it? And what's been interesting is that when you look at the field of reform groups, there's a bunch of great groups that are working on this issue. But there are a few, obstacles to reform that our group, United Republic, at unitedrepublic.org, what we're trying to do is fill some of those gaps. And those gaps, in our view, are this. Number one, the issue of campaign finance reform has been, and routing out corruption, has been largely relegated to the political left. And that's not really a criticism. It's more of just an observation of the fact that the groups that have been working on it historically identify as liberal and tend to speak to and organize liberal constituencies. But when you ask the American people from the left to the middle to the right to the completely disenchanted, there is near complete consensus at the grassroots about this, not amongst conservative elites. They are harder to pull into this because the role at the elite levels of both the Democratic and the Republican parties are just so, it's so perverse that it's very hard to get them on board. But grassroots people who identify conservative and moderate really do believe that we have to get money out of politics, and that is an absolutely critical thing that has to happen. Number two, up until now, there really has been no single-issue group to taking on this issue as its sole endeavor that has really attempted to build a huge army of millions and millions of people, a grassroots uprising to take on this issue. And that's another thing that we believe needs to be done. And then finally, the existing groups that are working on this and some of the really, I think, excellent legislators who have been offering constitutional amendments and legislation to try to fix it, they tend to go at it by taking on one, maybe two issues that they say, okay, we're going to fix this. So, for example, a politician might say, we're going to establish that corporations are not people, and by doing that, a bunch of good things that will happen, like reversing Citizens United and creating spending limits in campaigns. Other reformers are saying, let's create public funding of elections so that the government pays for it and private interests are not allowed to spend money at all. These are all worthy endeavors, but when you really look at what needs to happen to get money out of politics, you actually find a longer list where you need to do things like, for example, establish full transparency of all political spending. You have to explicitly regulate these independent expenditures and make sure they cannot continue to spend money. You have to explicitly reduce spending and campaign contributions. You have to take on the revolving door that allows politicians and their staff to finish work with the government and soon after start lobbying on K Street. You have to fix gerrymandering, where the politicians are manipulating what the House districts look like. And you have to get everybody registered and voting. And there's this whole longer list, ends up being about seven, that really all need to move forward and have to be part of a unified front, understanding that we're never going to win them all at once. But if we can create an agenda that everyone signs on to and says, this is what it takes to create a government that is not for sale, well, that's how we can actually start to win incremental victories towards the bigger ones.
Our guest, Josh Silver, you've just been listening to, the CEO and executive director of the new group, United Republic, at unitedrepublic.org, which is leading the fight in conjunction with other organizations to take the money out of politics, to clean up our political system. The phone lines are open here at Media Matters at WILLAM580, the number 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to a caller who's been waiting patiently. Line one, Urbana, you're on the air with Josh Silver.
Hello. excuse me. As an example of how the lobbyists have subverted and perverted the politicians, I would like to point out the NRA, the National Rifle Association, through their money has persuaded our representatives to legalize military assault rifles for sale, and the 30-round gun clip, which can be fired off in 15 seconds, both of which are totally unnecessary for the defense of their homeland or their home, and it's unnecessary. It's useless for hunting, but it's just the perversion of the money.
Well, I thank you, caller, because I should have added that to the list, right? I mean, it's an interesting thing for me, I will confide, because we're staying extremely focused on this issue of money in politics. Now, I happen to agree with you. When you look at the statistics in countries where there is some reasonable gun control, then gun violence is far, far, far lower than what we have in this country. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, Bob McChesney is actually famous for saying, hey, we need to have people involved in the debates that affect the shape and nature of our media and our internet system, and I'm happy with letting the results fall wherever they may, as long as the people have a place at that negotiating table. It's the same issue with money and politics. I'm happy to have the outcome of any debate by politicians who are not being bought and sold by the wealthiest 1% of Americans and corporations. And I would venture a guess that if that were to occur on the guns issue, that we would see reasonable restrictions in place.
Let's go to our next caller, line 2, Minnesota. You're on the air with Josh Silver from United Republic.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, I think you guys are really right that we should be trying to get money out of politics. I've heard Lawrence Lessinger has mentioned that we should be calling for a constitutional convention to push up the movement to get the move to amend amendment that says, yeah, get money out of politics or whatever. What I was wondering is, do we start, like, door knocking? Do we make, like, viral videos saying, like, President Obama, if you want my vote, you can't do a $1 billion campaign to run for an election. You got to put people back in their homes. You got to create jobs, something like that.
That's a great question. Well, first of all, you've asked two questions.
Yeah, so Josh, let me just interject before we even start there. He referred at the beginning to Larry Lessig and his work, and maybe you could just talk briefly just who Larry is and your relationship with him.
Sure. So Larry Lessig is a renowned attorney, scholar, who was at Stanford, Chicago. He's now at Harvard, and has used to work on copyright for the most part, and left that issue a few years ago, and said politics are corrupt, and until we address political corruption, there is no reason for me to continue my work on copyright. You could fill in the blank on any other issue, but he started something that ended up being called Root Strikers. About 50,000 people that we actually joined with as sort of a federation, and he continues to be one of the nation's preeminent leaders on this issue. And if anyone hasn't seen it, if you go to rootstrikers.org, you can see a video of his presentation on this issue that is really worth watching. But your question is a really important one, and that is, Professor Lessig believes that a constitutional convention is what needs to be pursued because Congress is so hopeless, there's no way we could ever create enough political heat to get them to actually enact reform. The fox putting a lock on the hen house dynamic is too severe. And so what he's calling for is the first time since the founding of the country that there be a constitutional convention. There's been 27 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. None of them have ever been enacted using a constitutional convention. They've been enacted by having two-thirds of the Congress pass them and then being ratified by three-quarters of the states. He's saying we need to go the convention route, which essentially says two-thirds of the states actually propose an amendment, and then three-quarters of the states have to then approve it. It's a very, very difficult organizing task, as you might expect, but I think... And you can find out more about it at Root Strikers, but I think what's important for you, the caller, to understand is that right now the most important thing we can do is begin to have some agreement about where it is that we're trying to go. And when I say that, I get back to the list I just rattled off. We got to fix the revolving door problem so politicians don't go out of office and start lobbying for the top 1% right away. We need transparency. We need to get campaign contributions down to $100. We need to stop these independent expenditures. There's a list, and we're putting them together at unitedrepublic.org. How you get there, in some ways, I think the best metaphor would be this laundry list that I'm saying, that represents the top of the mountain, and we're all starting to agree on where the top of the mountain is. And then some people are going to come in from the south. Some are going to come from the north. Some people are going to try for a constitutional convention. Other people are going to try for a regular convention, like the move to amend people that you mentioned. Other people are going to try to do public funding. Everyone's going to have a different route. We're not going to get the entire public interest community going up the same trail. But that's okay. And I think part of what United Republic is trying to do is say that's all right if there's a diversity in approach, and B, come to our website, unitedrepublic.org, and we'll show you who's where, who's doing what, and how you can plug in either with us or with somebody else.
Josh Silver, our guest on Media Matters today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone lines are open at 333-9455 or toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. United Republic, the new group, you can find out about them at unitedrepublic.org. They're battling money in politics. And before we get back to the phone lines, Josh, you know, something you and I have talked about for a decade now, but worth revisiting, which is, you know, if we had a credible political journalism in the United States and quality news media, it seems to me that this problem arguably wouldn't even exist at all, or it would certainly be much smaller. The lack of coverage of the issue, the lack of coverage of politics and campaigns magnifies money, so it's basically insurmountable almost.
Yeah, well, too true. I mean, we as you've documented as well as anybody in the country, the decimation of the Fourth Estate has really left us with a population that is extraordinarily vulnerable to political advertisements, which are not offset by actual real journalism, particularly on television, where the vast majority of Americans still go for their news and information. And so, you know, one of the biggest problems that we have, and part of the reason, again, for United Republics being created, is to actually provide some of the kind of deep dive investigations that not only expose corruption, but I think what's really been missing from the reform landscape and what is missing from the U.S. media landscape is really showing American people how this problem of money in politics is directly hurting them. And that is, and damaging their very interest. That is the job of the Fourth Estate. But as you've documented, the Fourth Estate is mostly concerned with the interests of the wealthiest Americans because it's the wealthiest Americans that buy the advertisements that the media are after, and thus those, the working Americans, the working poor, and their interests are of little concern. And it's, there's one other part that ties into this and that you've also documented, and that is simply the role of political advertising. I mean, political ads are by far, I mean, nothing is even remotely close, by far the most expensive expense for a political campaign, and of course for these independent expenditures. And the television and radio owners continue to have such overwhelming control of political discourse, again, because of money in politics, mostly in the form of the National Association of Broadcasters, that the most common sense approach to this problem, which is modeling other developed countries around the world and having free airtime for political candidates, totally common sense, totally rational, and would alleviate so much of the political money need for these politicians, it's not even on the table. It's not even up for debate because the powers that be can knock it down before it's even born. So this is again the sort of the fox putting a lock on the hen house dynamic that affects media and transcends into money and politics.
And then, Josh Silver, we do have, I think unbeknownst to probably 95% to 99% of Republicans and Americans, there actually is a candidate running for president, a former governor of a state, former member of Congress, with an elected career, certainly the equivalent of that of a Mitt Romney or a Rick Santorum, who's been running for the Republican nomination purely on the money and politics issue and getting rid of corruption is his signature issue. Yet he can't get on the debate stands. I don't know if he's on the ballot even, but he's completely unknown except on the fringe. His name is Buddy Romer. What's the story there? Why can't Buddy Romer, he's treated like he was from Lyndon LaRouche's party.
Exactly. Former Louisiana governor, former member of Congress, several terms. This guy is great. And, you know, his biggest problem is he came out and said, I'm not going to take more than $100 from anybody. And as a result, he never built a war chest, never got the ads, and never got the threshold.
So he's living proof of the importance of money.
Yeah, he's living proof that if you stick to ethics and you actually do what's right, then you have no way to compete. But I will offer one other positive, and it ties back to one of your previous callers. The idea being that, well, you know, I think the caller asked rhetorically, what do you do, just say to President Obama, well, I'm not going to give you any money unless you pledge to get your money out of politics. One of the things we'll be looking to do here in 2012 is we're going to be launching what we call a pledge on steroids. And this is, I think, one of the most exciting political tactics I've heard of in a long time. I didn't think of it, so I can say that. But that is, you take a pledge that consists of the bullet list that I described, a comprehensive reform agenda, and you go to every American and use our allies, people with millions of people on their email list, and you say, we want you to do three things. Number one, and I say this to you, caller, who called in a little while ago. Number one, ask your politicians to sign this pledge to for a sweeping overhaul of money in politics. Number two, put your money where your mouth is. So you pledge, everybody pledge, some amount of money, even if it's a dollar, it doesn't matter, but some amount of money for politicians who have signed the pledge. And then three, take a look at this a la carte menu, and you can take a look at every candidate for office who has signed this pledge, and you choose who your money is going to go to, and it will go directly to him or her. And we actually can start to create an economic incentive for politicians to do the right thing by promising to lead sweeping reforms to get money out of politics.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Our guest, Josh Silver from United Republic. Line three, Champagne, you're on the air.
Yeah, boy, I'd like to get some of that lobbyist money out of politics. Everybody is complaining about the bailouts under the Bush administration, under Obama both. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, there was an article in the News Gazette, and I don't remember exactly when. I'm guessing sometime in 2010. It was a very small article on an inside page. Reported, I think it was 10 congressmen and senators who had taken money from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae lobbyists. Newt Gingrich was one, and I'm thinking his was something like in the $600,000 range, just him alone. I mean, these were hundreds of thousands of dollars that they were taking from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae lobbyists. Boy, that is scary, you know. I mean, when votes are purchased like that.
Well, and, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg, right? I mean, there's some sweet solace in seeing what just happened in South Carolina yesterday, in that finally the press started to report on the fact that Mitt Romney is paying roughly a 15% tax on his many hundreds of millions of dollars in income, while the rest of us pay somewhere generally between 20 and 28%. And people said, I'm sick of this. I mean, I think nearly half of the South Carolina voters voted, you know, in the week prior to the election, and Romney tanked because, I think it's clear, because of that. But the irony is that these pro-business politicians, and I'll tell you, it's not just Republicans, folks. It's many, many, many Democrats. Both parties are corrupted by this. They do this every day. They protect these corporate tax breaks. You saw General Electric got these billions in tax refunds. They don't pay any taxes. The Cayman Islands, and you know where these folks are protecting their money and not paying any taxes, just skirting all kinds of public interest protections like workers' protections and environmental protections. This is happening every day. It is status quo. And until we get money out, it's just going to keep happening.
You know, Josh, you're right, I think, that this is very much a nonpartisan issue in a certain fundamental sense, that there's enormous support for getting money out of politics across the political spectrum. I don't think there's any question about that. And in that sense, it's not a left-right issue. At the same time, though, if you look at the people who are bankrolling our campaigns now and the people who own K Street, who pay for all the lobbying, or the vast majority of it, they tend to be extraordinarily wealthy people, regardless of which party they're in or which they support. And they usually work both sides of the street. But they, you know, extremely rich people don't really care that much about public schools because their kids almost always go to private schools. They don't really care about Social Security because, you know, that's not an issue for them. They're not going to be worrying about their retirement years if they're going to be starving. And so, I mean, built into it, there is sort of a partisanship towards, you know, what would be traditionally called America Today, pro-market conservative politics, because big money benefits most directly by those.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, having been working in Washington for 10 years, it's just stunning to see that the extent to which it afflicts both parties.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. But that doesn't contradict it. That just means both parties are in on it.
Yeah. Now, the thing we have going for us, though, Bob, is that we outnumber them by about somewhere around 311 million. Just, you know, you 50,000. And that's, now that's the key, though. And you know, I should have mentioned in the intro, the other thing United Republic is doing that has not been done thus far, we're taking two Democrats and two Republicans from the U.S. House of Representatives, and we're going to be spending a bunch of money and a bunch of creative organizing and creative ads to take these guys down and take them out of office. And the criteria for getting in our bullseye is that you regularly sell out your constituents to K Street. And I think that until we start actually, you know, taking the gloves off and start creating real electoral pain for politicians who sell out, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. And one thing is for sure, the only way politicians are going to do the right thing on this issue is through pain. They will not do it through cajoling and backslapping. That you can be certain of.
You know, one thing, Josh Silver, that has taken place with the corruption in our politics and the big money is that it's changed the career trajectory for our politicians. And I don't think many Americans are really aware of that. For example, you know, the big payoff now if you go into a life in politics comes not in getting elected to the House or Senate, but for most of those members, it will be when they leave the House and Senate and then go on to $1 million a year income as a lobbyist in Washington, lobbying the House and Senate, which is now the pattern for basically the majority of people who retire from the House and Senate. And that's why so many are retiring, is to go cash in their chips across the street.
Right, and their staff. Here's a stunner. September 2011, a report came out. 5,400 people have, in the last decade, left Capitol Hill and gone on to K Street to lobby their former colleagues. 5,400, that's roughly 45 people a month for the last 10 years. And that trend just continues to grow because of that.
Well, you know, the Hill newspaper, which is sort of the trade publication of Capitol Hill, just this last week had a long article on how the K Street lobbying firms are sort of in a bidding war for these members of Congress who are about to leave Congress and are going to go over to K Street. And it's sort of like, you know, in baseball teams competing for the best free agent. It's rather, frankly, grotesque to see this process going on with so-called public servants.
Well, and also, though, you know, it's really another thing that most of your listeners and most Americans just don't know is the way that the laws are actually made. People don't realize it, but, I mean, the way laws are actually made is perfect for this corrupt system, because the way they're made is members of Congress will slip language into a piece of legislation hours before it's voted on. They will be either friends with or in the actual what's called a conference committee, which is a completely off-the-record meeting that happens between different members of Congress when they reconcile the differences between two similar proposals. And they can slip in whatever they want, and often people don't even know who did it. So the way laws are made and tax loopholes are made and the way Glass-Steagall is destroyed, the law that protected us from the banking crisis, or would have, the way that all of these public interest protections are gutted most of the time happens because someone in the know, a former politician, someone with a relationship, calls up their pal who they used to be roommates with or they used to work with and just says, hey, we really need this, and they can do it because that's the nature of the system.
Our guest, Josh Silver, Executive Director of United Republic. You can learn more about United Republic at unitedrepublic.org. Phone lines are open here at Media Matters on WILL AM 580, 333-9455, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Josh, when I talk about this issue with students or with friends, one of the responses that sometimes comes up is people say, hey, this is the American way. America's a capitalist society. It's always been about people with money getting in there and influencing policy. And that, you know, that for better or for worse, and some people think for better, that's the way our system is supposed to be, and that's the way it is. You know, what's the problem, pal?
Right. Well, you know, that's the classic argument, and it's got a very simple answer. We have rules that say things like you're not allowed to go break into other people's homes and take their stuff or hurt them. And if you do, you go to jail. You're not allowed to speed because it's dangerous and you can hurt innocent people. There's a long list of things that you can and cannot do in society, and it's called a modern civilized society. Before that, there was anarchy, right? Before there was actually developed societies, where there was no rule of law, and people pillaged and raped each other and took their stuff all the time. But as humans evolved in these modern nation states, we've actually created rules of the road to create a little bit of order out of the chaos. Well, what's quite clear is if you take a laissez-faire approach to money and politics, then the very wealthiest interests prevail, and you have things like banking crises, which take away people's entire retirements and throw not just the country but the world into a recession and economic uncertainty like we have today in a way that we really haven't seen for many, many decades. And you have a system where the most basic, protections, like, for example, the gas fracking that you're seeing across the both the East and the West, where people's wells are, you know, water's coming out that can catch on fire, and that's not even being stopped. I mean, this is the kind of insanity that happens when you don't have basic protections. So to those people that you're describing, Bob, I say there's a very distinct similarity between the very same laws that prevent people from coming into your house and robbing and killing you to the ones that we're talking about on money and politics.
But were fat cats buying and selling elections in the 19th century the way they are today?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there is no doubt. There is a long history of money corrupting politics. There's no doubt. But what was different about then is that the amount of money, including in relative terms, really was much, much less. So, for example, as documented in Winner Take All Politics, that brilliant book, which I think you had one of their authors on the show, didn't
both
you?
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, and as they described and talked about on your show, it really wasn't until around the Carter administration, roughly 1978, that corporations, and it was really after Nixon had passed created the EPA and passed a bunch of public interest protections, that corporations really figured out that they needed to beef up and create this juggernaut that we have today. Before the 70s, it really didn't exist nearly to the extent that it does now.
Our guest today, Josh Silver, here on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. And Josh, I think the other place that interests people for comparative sake is how do other advanced democracies conduct their elections? Are there other countries that do it like the United States, where television political advertising costs a fortune and takes almost all the energy of the campaign? Or are there other ways that democracies have found ways to elect leaders that don't go that route?
Yeah, it's a good question, and the fact is we're pretty much at the bottom of the pile. I mean, we're in the bottom of the pile in a bunch of different ways, right? One of them you've documented on your show or just described is how we're one of the lowest per capita funders of our public media in the U.S. Likewise, we have a system which in some ways the problems that we face in the U.S. Electoral system is the result of what I think was a well-intentioned effort by the founders of this country, who really had no idea the extent to which this money in politics would become a problem, really wanted to differentiate our electoral system from Europe. And they wanted to get away from the traditional parliamentary system, and they wanted to create something new. And they almost had it. They just didn't foresee the big money, and it's sort of a little bit of a massive pockmark in an otherwise pretty brilliant document, which has lots of them, but you know, the point being, if we had a proportional, if we had a parliamentary system, we'd have a couple things that are key. One, you'd have short election cycles, because as you know, in most other parliamentary systems, elections are not on a set date. They are called for, and then there's a set limit for how long they run, usually between 6 and 10 weeks for the most part. So, A, you've got this shorter election period with which to raise money and spend it and manipulate outcomes. B, you do have spending limits and contribution limits. In this country, the courts have held that contribution limits are legal, and it's about $2,300 per cycle in the U.S. But spending limits are illegal to impose on a candidate, which means politicians in the U.S. ever since 1976 have not been able to. There's been no spending limits imposed on them. They can spend as much as they want. Billionaires could spend $1 billion because it's equated with their First Amendment right to free speech. So the spending limits are what need to be imposed here in this country based on a constitutional amendment. But the last part of parliamentary systems in other countries that's so much better than ours is the ability to have third and fourth and fifth party participation, viable runs at office that we just simply cannot have in the current system. A lot of people say, "Oh, well, let's get an independent to run, or let's get some other a Green Party to run, or someone else." In this country, it's virtually impossible to succeed at that because the very structure of the system won't allow it. And so that's an area where I wish that the founders had actually adopted a more European model.
Well, you know, the founders mentioned nothing about political parties in the Constitution. That came later, and all the stuff about the two-party system has nothing to do with the United States Constitution. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 4, Terre Haute, Indiana. You're on the air with Josh Silver.
Yes. Josh, you mentioned the amendment to the Constitution, and I wondered if there would be, in the light of what you just had mentioned there about limiting the amount that a candidate could spend, if there were some kind of something put into an amendment that they could spend only so much of a percentage above what their salary brings. For example, say according to the population or according to their salary, let's say that the president could spend only 10 times more than his salary. A senator could spend only 5 times more than his salary. A House member of the House of Representatives could spend 3 times more than his salary or whatever. And put that into the amendment that way and do it from the top down rather than from the bottom up where we could only contribute, say, $100 per contributor from that side and then have it from the other side from the top down.
It's an interesting idea, and in fact, I have never heard it, and I'm jotting it down, and I'll talk to some of our attorneys and see if they've ever heard of something like it. But it is an interesting one. I do think from an elegance point of view, if you can limit the independent expenditures and limit campaign contributions to $100, that is a much simpler regimen to enforce. Because I think one of the tricky parts of what you've just proposed is, again, trying to deal with the expenditures by other bodies, other groups that are trying to get around those restrictions.
See, if it were in an amendment, it could be legal.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting idea, and I'll circle back and put it on the list and see what folks have to say about it.
Yeah, thank you very much, caller. Josh Silver, we've only got a little bit of time left. There's so much more to talk about, but one point I want to get to, you mentioned Larry Lessig's idea of having a constitutional convention, and a way to bypass the corruption in Congress is to go through the states, meaning having state legislatures to support you. I mean, that's an interesting concept because, you know, what we're learning is that state governments and local races at the state level, where there's even no journalism covering those races oftentimes, sometimes are more prone to being dominated by money than even the more prominent national races.
Yeah, I mean, the big concern, I think it would be, it's an interesting tactic, and I think it should be attempted. The obvious challenge is that so many state capitals are equally, if not more, beholden to big money special interests than Washington is. You find that across the country, and it's just very difficult to envision a successful path to victory today where you're going to get two-thirds of those states to call for a convention and then three-quarters of them to approve of whatever comes out of it. And that's also to say nothing of, you know, I mean, just it's going to be chaotic. But, I do think it's a worthy goal. And we need to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks.
You know, we've talked about Buddy Romer, the former governor of Louisiana, now running an uncovered and unknown race for the Republican presidential nominee, an admitted free market conservative, but just wants to take the money out of politics. Are there other politicians in office or out of office, public figures, who have made money in politics a signature issue that our listeners should know about so they can say, okay, here's someone who I can follow and maybe showing some leadership?
Absolutely. The easiest way to do it is actually to go to unitedrepublic.org, and on the right side of our page, you're going to see a banner that says the 28th Amendment. And when you do that, you see that there actually is a bunch of politicians who have done it. Congressman Ted Deutch.
Who are the leaders, though? Anyone can sign something. You and I both know that.
Yeah.
Who's actually out there busting their butt on this?
Congressman Ted Deutch from Florida, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, that probably should come as no surprise. These are guys who have introduced legislation. Tom Udall, a senator from New Mexico, Congressman Jim McGovern from Massachusetts has also offered an amendment. Of course, Congresswoman Donna Edwards has offered one as well. And I think Representative Kurt Schrader from Oregon has also offered an amendment. So there's that's your top list.
How's our Illinois delegation doing?
I don't think we don't have one. We've got one nearby. We've got Congressman Keith Ellison has offered one. He's from Minnesota, and Congressman John Yarmuth from Kentucky has also offered one. So
that's pretty pathetic. That's the best you do is Minnesota and Kentucky.
Yeah, well, this is that was the rounding out my list. But the point is, this can be confusing stuff. I mean, think about it. I've just listed for you the number of those are all politicians, all of them with different amendments proposed to the Constitution. So one of the things we're doing at United Republic is trying to make some sense of it for people, and that's why if you go to unitedrepublic.org and go to the 28th Amendment banner, it spells out each one and actually lays out what it says and what the rationale is.
How big is United Republic? Who funds it? You know, how long have you been around? What are the plans?
So we have 300,000 members. The bulk of our members came from an MSNBC host, Dylan Radigan, who went on a famous rant in August of last year, where he basically said, "I've been doing this TV stuff for 3 years, and I'm tired of the both parties are bogus and corrupt, and we need to get money out." And people just responded, and he created this Get Money Out Foundation, and all these people joined it. Then we merged. We now have about 14 staff. We have 300,000 members. We have a budget of $5 million for this year, and we're going to try for $10 million next year. And we're going big. I mean, we believe that this is the issue whose time has come. I'm sure that if we don't figure out a way to get money out of politics, there really is, not to sound apocalyptic, but I don't believe there's any way that we're going to be able to solve our nation's most basic problems and challenges. And I don't see how this fragile republic of ours is going to survive if we don't figure out a way to win this.
Well, Jon Stewart and especially Stephen Colbert have really made a big issue out of money in politics, especially the super PACs. What's your take on what they've done? How valuable has it been? How useful? Are you concerned that it might veer off into bad directions?
No. On the contrary, these guys are brilliant as usual. I mean, but what they have done is, and for anyone who hasn't seen it, go to the Comedy Central website and take a look what they've done recently. Stephen Colbert, of course, running for president, and has a super PAC that's been is run by Jon Stewart, and they make this wonderful parody about how they're not coordinating at all on the super PAC. Their support of Stephen Colbert's presidency and show what a joke it is. Because, I mean, the fact is you're watching every day these politicians getting up and say, "I never talk to my super PAC," and, you know, these guys are just doing their own thing, when, in fact, it's their former chief of staff, it's their former communications director. I mean, it's really, if it weren't actually true, I mean, it really would be. I don't even know what to say. It's so absurd. But the fact is these guys, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, as usual, are shining a bright light on the most troubling and vexing issue, and doing it in a way that only they can.
Real quick, because I hear the band tuning up in the background, Josh Silver. People interested in getting involved, what should they do?
Go to unitedrepublic.org, join the Republic, sign up. You just put in your name and email address. Forward our URL to everybody you know who cares about this issue. Tell them we are building an army. We need millions of people. We need people to get involved. And we promise, I promise, we will not send you silly petitions that go to congressmen. We only do interesting, fun, cool stuff that's going to actually break through and innovate and make this a exciting and doable movement.
Josh Silver, thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday to join us here at Media Matters. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thanks, Bob. You too.
And I want to thank Kyle Krohoff for working the board for me, as always, on a Sunday. Christina Williams, my producer. I'm Bob McChesney. It's been a wonderful day with my listening audience. We'll be back in 167 hours. Until then, have a great time.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events, lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
Here is the weather forecast. A slight chance of light rain showers this afternoon with a high in the 40s. The winds will be as high as 20 miles an hour. Tonight, showers and a good chance of thunderstorms in the evening, then a chance of showers after midnight. Not so cool, low in the mid-30s. Monday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain or snow in the morning. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM.